hall again. Now she must go. She must find a place of hiding as far from here as she might travel before the sun rose bright in the spring sky. Her helpers seemed to be waiting. Perhaps they expected some reward. Nessa took her knife again and moved sunwise around the circle, undoing what she had made here. She spoke a few words to the guardian of each quarter, spending a little longer in the north, home of Bone Mother, for she knew the Ancient One had sent courage to her heart and steadied her hand in this night's work. There. The circle was unmade, the morning brightened, the wide sky showed a faint rim of rose pink to the east. Still, they waited there, eyes dark and solemn, bodies clad in tattered rags, whose openings showed old, deep slashes to the skin, neat patterns of lines on chest, belly, back, or thigh. Some wore talismans of whalebone driven through ear or nose, and one had a necklace of tiny skulls.
"Thank you,"
Nessa stammered, not at all sure they would understand.
"I honor you for coming to aid me. Without you, I could not have completed this task."
They stood, unblinking.
"I would like to give you something, some token of my gratitude," she said. "But I came away in haste. I have very little."
Now they were staring at guard. One licked his lips. The hound growled a warning.
"I have a little food, bread, some hard cheese, some dried fruit. You are welcome to that."
She bent toward the bag, wondering how she would manage if even this meager supply were gone. A bony finger tapped her shoulder. Nessa looked up. Its owner motioned toward her face, then to his own, touching the lips. A rustling went around the circle. They edged in closer.
"A kiss!"
Nessa rose to her feet, blinking in amazement.
"That is all you want. This I will give gladly, and then I must be on my way. I will remember each of you, and do my best to keep your secret places safe. Our kind and your kind, we are both of the fabric of these islands, though our feet seldom walk the same path."
Right around the circle of them she went, stopping here, rising on tiptoe there. Each got his kiss. Each felt the touch of her lips on cheek or mouth. Each felt the warmth of her hands, and one or two were bold enough to put an arm around her, to touch roughened fingers to soft hair or narrow waist. When she was done, she opened her mouth to thank them again, and saw the grins that creased their fierce faces. But before she could speak, the lights faded away, and with a whisper of shadow on dew-touched grass, they were gone. Behind her, the mound still rustled with life, as myriad small creatures worked their magic of remaking.
"Come, guard," said Nessa,
shouldering the little bag and picking up the other with its strange cargo. The shovel she must leave somewhere in the fields. It would slow her progress, but could not be abandoned in this place.
"We must seek shelter until it is dark again. Come, good friend."
When it came to it, they did not go far, for there were soon men about, Somalid's men, and it was quickly clear to Nessa, peering out from what refuge she could find, that they were looking for someone. Perhaps they had learned of her escape, finding the ruins of Kinnart's boat, her footsteps on the shore, some other trace. Perhaps someone had sensed her purpose and sought to silence the voice she would summon. She could see small groups of warriors scouring the countryside, going into every cottage, every barn, searching each fold and cranny of the land, perhaps on orders not to return until they had found their prize. Of her own folk, she saw none as she fled. Nor would she have sought them, for to ask for shelter among what survivors still lived in isolated farmhouse or far-flung settlement was to bring down Somalid's wrath on them. What must be done, she would do alone. She was tired. She was so weary her legs would hardly go forward, her eyes barely remain open to see her way. She would have to stop. She would have to rest and go on at dusk, when she might move more freely undetected. She watched while a group of five warriors searched a hay barn, now all but empty of its summer harvest. The best stock had not long been let out of winter confinement to feed on the first new growth in the fields. It was strange to remember that, but for Margaret and Ulf, the crop that had been stored here might never have been gathered in to nourish the herd through the dark season. When the search was over and the men moved on, Nessa stole into the barn with guard by her side and crept into a dark corner among the remnant hay. She lay down with her pack under her head and her arm curled protectively around the other bag. She was too weary to eat, to drink, to do anything at all. In the far corner, Guard caught some small, squealing thing and ate it hungrily. Nessa thought about Margaret, a fine, strong girl. A pity she had not been able to sway Sommerled. He had not listened to her, and he had not listened to Eivind. He had scorned the good counsel even of those who loved him. He had gone his own way, and now it seemed he would make the choices and determine the path for all of them. That could not be allowed to happen. She would stop him. When it was dark, she must head southward to the Great Circle, and then to the coast again. The hidden tribe had come to her aid. Now she must seek help from another courser, though she trembled to think of it. She would go on. She would. Nessa slept. In the doorway lay Guard, one eye half open, ready for trouble. The sun passed over, the breeze brought a shower of rain, and another. Down the hill, armed men passed and passed again, searching. The sunlight glinted on their spears, on their helms, on the burnished bosses of their round shields.
"Not a whisker,"
said one warrior to another, easing his back.
"Whatever way he went, it wasn't this one."
"So what do we do?"
asked the second.
"Report back empty-handed. Who wants to tell Sommerled we searched from dawn till midday and found nothing? Not me."
"We could try northward,"
suggested another.
"Fool's errand," grunted the first. "The man's a wolfskin. Wild creatures they are. Slip across the land like the hunters they're named for. Like shadows. Like ghosts."
"Bollocks,"
said the second.
"Any man can be caught, so long as he's flesh and blood. Sommerled's right. Eivind turned into a traitor. Traitors have to be taken and punished. No chieftain worth his salt lets a man turn against his own and get away with it, wolfskin or no wolfskin."
"Never catch him. Not unless he wants to be caught," muttered the first man. "If you ask me, Sommerled's a fool."
"What?"
Four voices spoke as one. His companions turned toward him, eyes narrowed, mouths grim. Each fingered his weapon.
"Nothing. Come on, then. North it is."
They moved across the land in silence, leaving no tumble-down hut untouched, no cave, no sheepfold, no heap of weathered rock unsearched. In the hay barn, small creatures stirred in the walls, and Guard's ears twitched. Nessa slept a sleep of dark dreams. Chapter 11. As night fell, a chill wind came up, numbing his ears, hurting his head, setting a shiver in his bones. He had stolen sword and knife, a pair of boots, a haunch of meat which he'd already eaten, crouched motionless in the lee of a stone wall between fields, sometime during the day's gradual journey southward. Without fire, it would be a cold, dark night. But fire could only attract pursuers. In darkness, he was safe from Sommerled. A wolf finds his way by moon and stars, by the faint scent of the enemy, by the subtle movement of leaf and twig. Thus Eivind must go. But for now his aching body demanded rest, his throbbing head and hazy eyes cried out for sleep. Ah, sleep. He longed for it and dreaded it. Sleep brought a bright tangle of dreams, and all the dreams were of her. The bad ones, Nessa frightened, Nessa captive, Nessa burning. From those he would wake with flesh bathed in cold sweat, heart racing, eyes full of tears. The good ones. Her soft voice, her elusive smile, the scent of spring flowers, words of love she had never spoken, sweet touches she had never given. He walked with her on the shore in summer. He sat silent by her on the clifftop in springtime. Waking from those dreams was bitterest of all, and he did not know which was strongest in him. The craving to see her, or the horror of confronting, each time anew, the knowledge that she had been taken from him. He cursed the gods for sending him such dreams, and yet he would not have been without them. He could not go much farther. He must find the nearest hiding place and seek rest, at least for a little. Before dawn he would move on, and with luck be close to Hafnarfjarðar tomorrow, close enough to get a message to Eirik somehow, and find help. All day he'd observed armed men swarming across the fields in search of him. To go to his brother's dwelling was impossible. He would need all the stealth he could summon, and all the subtlety that Sommerlet had always told him a wolfskin did not have. Perhaps that was what he should be trying to do, to think as Sommerlet would think, cleverly, cunningly. Sommerlet had always known how to put a legal argument, setting it out in logical sequence, clearly and whizzingly. When challenged by the opposition, Sommerlet would always summon some trick of words, or aim some barb at his adversary in order to extricate himself. Eivind had never seen him lose. Very well, then. He'd need to do something like that. A shiver went through him, for he knew this challenge was near impossible. Without help, it seemed quite beyond him, and to seek help from his brother or Thord or others such as Brother Tig or even Margaret, that was to set those others at grave risk. What if something happened to Eirik, and his brother never returned home to his family in Rogaland? What kind of burden was that to have on your conscience? Pondering this and trying to ignore the creeping cold, Eivind marched grimly on in the darkness until he came to a place he recognized. He had come too far to the east, and was close to the great ring of standing stones, set by a narrow neck of land on rising ground. He had walked this way before, in the days when any man might pass freely across this land without fear of sudden ambush. But no man came here by night unless he must. The stones were full of ancient power. All felt the slow dance of spirits weaving around and between these grave giants. Dotting the landscape close by the great circle were earthen mounds, some sealed, some with low entrances leading to darkness. Only a fool would seek shelter in such a howl after sunset. They'd all heard the tales the locals put about, of how a night in there could turn your hair white as snow and leave you screaming crazy things the rest of your life. Without saying it in as many words, it was made clear these old places were forbidden. Eivind walked on until he saw the form of one such barrow looming up ahead. He thought he could discern an opening, though all was shades of grey on grey. The moon was low in the sky, casting the stones' long shadows across the heather-clad hillside and touching the lake water with a faint glimmer of silver. It was apparent to him that he could go no farther. He recognized the gradual numbing in his legs and knew they would buckle and disobey him if he asked them to carry him on. Crouched double, he crept into the secret depths of the howe. He walked the edge of the chamber once, touching the neat-laid stones with outstretched fingers, judging the size, the positions of three small alcoves. He did not reach within them. If precious things were hidden here, it was not for him to disturb them. Eivind unbuckled his stolen sword. He spread his wolfskin on the earthen floor and sat, leaning his back awkwardly against the sloping wall, staring into the blackness. The wolfskin was all he had left, the last thing that was his own. That and the small tokens Nessa had given him. His captors had tried to seize even those, with muttered words about spells and witchcraft. He had not fought them for his bright sword or his dagger. He had not even fought them for bitter. So great had been his anguish on that day of death and betrayal. But he had fought them for this scrap of cloth, this ribbon, these little things that seemed of no consequence, yet encompassed the world in the space of a girl's cupped hand. He did not want to dream. He sat thinking, delaying the moment when his weary lids must drop over his eyes, and the longed-for, the dreaded visions again assail him. The wolfskin was warm beneath him. He welcomed that. Not one of them had dared lay hands upon that badge of honour, that garment of power. It was strange. In one way he did not deserve the skin any more. In another it had never been more truly part of him. Thor had let him go. He would never again hear that golden trumpet voice calling him on, would never again know the thrilling flood of rage that threw the warrior forward in blind courage to do the god's will, the call that made of a man an unthinking weapon of sheer, unassailable power. Invulnerable. That was what they said. A wolfskin could be stopped neither by spear, nor axe, nor broadsword. The Warfather's silence had seemed a death blow. Without that voice, he had indeed been lost, cast adrift, bereft of strength and robbed of purpose. A wolfskin vowed lifelong loyalty. To break that vow was a kind of death. But he had been human then, as full of doubts and aspirations, of love and sadness as he was at this moment. Thor's cry had made him deaf to that. The red haze of battle frenzy had made him blind to it. Now he understood what it was to be a man, that it was to be weak as well as strong, to be foolish sometimes and wise sometimes, to know how to love as well as to kill. And he had learned that there were other paths for him, other gods who called in the deep places of the earth, in the lap of wavelets on the shore, in the breath of the west wind. He had learned that there were other kinds of courage. He knew, with deep certainty, that the islands held a new path for him. He needed only move forward to find it. His fingers moved across the fur of the wolfskin, feeling its softness, its strength, its beauty and power. He thought he saw the wolf's eyes glowing in the darkness, but now they were not yellow and feral. They were the blue of a spring sky, full of courage and sorrow. They were his own eyes. It was his own skin. So long, so many seasons it had taken him to learn this lesson. He had believed it bravery, to feel no fear. It was only now, when there seemed nothing left but darkness, that he understood what it was to be the wolf. His eyes closed despite himself. Dark turned darker. This time the dream came at once, a soft rustling from the entry as of gentle footsteps, a flickering gold light across the small chamber. She was there, standing hesitant by the opening, clad in blue tunic, dark shift, her soft hair loose over her shoulders, a little bag on her back, a bundle under her arm. In her free hand, she carried a tiny lamp. Its glow illuminated her pale skin, her deeply shadowed eyes. Her lips parted in the sudden shock of recognition. Her hand began to shake. The lamp wobbled perilously, spilling oil, threatening to fall. He heard her voice, a whisper of astonished disbelief. Avi? Gods, this was cruel indeed, for the nightmare to copy so closely what might have been real. How could he bear this? The urge in him was fierce to leap to his feet, to take two strides across and fold in his arms this lovely phantom, this beguiling trick of light and memory. Yet he knew the moment he reached her she would fade, and he would be left with the night and the loneliness. He sat quite still. He scarcely dared to draw breath lest she vanish. Evie! The vision said again. And now a hairy grey form pushed past her skirts and hurtled toward him, tail thrashing in delight, tongue licking his face in an exuberant display of recognition. Eivind rose slowly to his feet, eyes fixed on the slender figure opposite. The lamp shook. She was going to drop it, and it would go out, and she would disappear forever. "Careful," he said, stepping forward.
"Here, let me take it."
He reached out. He took the little light carefully from her and turned to place it safely in one of the alcoves. A warm glow spread through the round chamber, echoing the warmth that seemed to be flowing now, miraculous, incredible, into every corner of his wounded heart. The moment his fingers had touched hers, he had known that she was real. Eivind turned back. There was no need at all for words. His arms went around her, and hers around him. They stood thus enfolded a long time unmoving, for the message that flowed between them was deep and solemn, and needed no more for understanding than the beating of heart on heart. The hound, however, had a wish to be a part of things, and at length made his presence known again by jumping to plant his great forepaws on Nessa's shoulder and giving little whines of excitement. Reluctantly, Eivind released his hold and moved back a step, staring at her in wonderment.
"I thought you were dead," he said, finding his voice did not come as readily as usual. "I thought you had perished there in your uncle's hall. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry I failed you. I tried, but..."
"Shh," Nessa said, putting her fingers up to touch his lips to silence. "You are here. That's all that matters now. How is it you are here, Evie? I saw you fall. I saw you clubbed down and trampled. I thought I had lost you too that day." Her voice was shaking. In the lamplight, he could see the tracks of tears on her cheeks. He could see the deep weariness in her eyes, the pallor of her skin.
"You must sit down, here,"
Eivind said, drawing her over to the place where the wolfskin was laid on the ground.
"You look exhausted. You should eat and drink. You must rest. I have some water here, but no food. I made a rapid departure and brought only what I could snatch before I ran. Nessa."
She sat. She looked at him, and he was instantly lost for words. In silence, he fetched his stolen water skin and offered it for her to drink. "I have some food," she told him. "Bread, cheese. It's in my pack. We may as well share it now. Who knows what tomorrow may bring?" "No, not that bag," she said sharply as he moved to open the larger bundle she'd carried. "The other, the small one, that's it." It was another night like that first one, when they had sat together by soft light under the earth and spoken as if there were no barriers between them. Eivind saw the recognition of that in Nessa's eyes. Yet it was different as well. That first time they had sat side by side, hand in hand, as if that were quite natural. Tonight, after that first fierce embrace of recognition, a sudden constraint had fallen between them. They sat close, but each was careful now not to touch. Their eyes met and looked away, and met again, as if unable to deny what was as yet unspoken. Eivind fetched the small store of food. Nessa divided it, giving the dog an equal share, and they made pretense of eating. "How did you escape?" she ventured. "I cannot understand how you survived so harsh a blow."
"Grim's an expert. He did not intend to kill me. And I've a hard head and a will to go on. That much has brought me here. And you. Someone had told me you had perished. He told me you were in the hall with King Angus, with your uncle."
It seemed she grew still paler, her eyes full of dark memories. "My uncle expected an attack sometime, though not so soon. He made me promise to run and hide if it happened, and I kept my promise. I came away in a little boat, when all were gone. Someone had killed them, maybe. All my people, all the fine young men, every one. He hacked off their heads and left their bodies strewn on open ground, gull pickings, worm fodder. He defiled the whaleback forever with that unthinking act of desecration. I walked among the fallen. I saw this work of madness. He struck down the kinstone. It seems to me an ocean of tears cannot speak such sorrow as this." Eivind nodded. No word seemed adequate. He longed to take her in his arms again, to offer simple comfort, but he did not think he could. "Why are you here? Where are you going?" she asked him suddenly.
"To Hafnarfjarðar, to seek my brother. I had evidence, clear proof of Somalid's responsibility for Ulf's death. I was foolish. I showed it to him, thinking to prevent the attack on the whaleback, and he took it from me. He would not hear me, Nessa. And the others, I tried to tell them. I tried to stop them, but it was too late. The light of battle blinded them to the truth, but I will prove my case, despite all. I will find witnesses to what happened that day on High Island, and witnesses to the burning that killed Håkon and his wife. My brother can help me. I should move on at daybreak. Somalid's men are everywhere searching for me. but I cannot leave you alone with nobody to guard you. Where can you go? Where can you be safe? I should be by your side to shield you.
She was silent a little, toying with the crust of bread she held. Guard's eyes followed every movement.
I have something to do, a task that must be completed. It's a little like a ritual, that's the only way I can describe it. To do this, I must have some time alone, in a particular place. I'm traveling there now. It lies to the west. I came this way only to speak to the stones, to tell them my uncle's story. Evie, I cannot describe for you what comes next. It is dark and secret. But if I achieve this task, it will help. Its purpose is to confront Somerled with the truth of what he has done. So my quest is the same as yours. Her words troubled him deeply.
You can't go on alone. It's not safe for you, he said. His men are everywhere. You must have seen them. He heard me accuse him openly, and he will not stop until he silences me. As for you, you wouldn't get across the fields. You'd be taken prisoner the first day. I don't think you fully understand Somerled's purpose, what he may intend for you. He spoke to me of making you his wife, of claiming the royal bloodline for his own sons. It is this he will pursue once he learns you live. I know him.
Nessa nodded gravely. I am aware of this. He visited my uncle's hall. He spoke of it quite openly.
When?
Long ago, when he threatened us with annihilation. My hand was to be part of the price for sparing our people's lives. That gave me many sleepless nights, Evie. Sleepless nights and troubled days.
Why didn't you tell me? He whispered.
I wanted to, but I couldn't. It was too hard. I couldn't find the words. It would have been a high price to pay, but I did wonder if I should agree to save the folk. Now that I have seen Somerled at work, I know that I was right to refuse. Such a bargain would have won my people only a life of bitter servitude. Besides, I knew I could not wed Somerled. I knew it.
Because you are a priestess, Avon said,
finding again that his voice was not quite obedient to his will.
I understand that.
Nessa was regarding him very intently.
I could not wed Somerled, she said again.
I realized it was not possible.
Let me come with you, he blurted out. Let me guard you and help you with this task, whatever it is. I thought I'd lost you forever. I can't lose you again.
I don't know, she said slowly. The task is, it is something I have to do alone. It is a work of magic in which you cannot play a part. But if I could have a companion on this journey, save my faithful guard here, it would be you I would wish for above all others, Evie.
Can I not at least watch over you, so you can complete the task undisturbed? I would keep you safe. I ask for nothing more than that. Please don't turn your back on me and walk away. Not when I can place myself between you and the peril that shadows your steps.
What about your own quest? Your own task?
It can wait.
He knew, even as he said it, that this was not so.
I don't know. I, too, dread saying farewell again, lest it truly be the last time. I'm not sure I can bear another loss. We need some guidance in this, a sign. If only Rona were still alive. I miss her wisdom so much.
She may be still alive, Avon told her cautiously. Though she did place herself at great risk. She's an old woman, certainly, but there's a core of iron there every bit as strong as your own.
Nessa's eyes widened. What do you mean? Don't you know her cottage was burned with everything in it? Somerled's thugs devastated our holy place, laid waste its secrets. An old woman does not survive such an attack. Avon smiled.
Ah, that was not quite the way of it. She and I, we watched the burning. and it was sad to see her things go up in smoke. That was indeed an act of barbarism. When Somerled's men sought to find us in the howe, I stepped out to confront them, I and the dog Shadow. My body was still weak. I doubt if I could have fought them off if it had come to that. But they fled in fear, thinking me some ghostly warrior. That night we slept in the howe, and in the morning Shadow was gone, and so was Runa. I don't know where they went, Nessa, but there is at least some cause for hope.
Thank you, she said softly. And I know what she would advise. In the morning, I will cast the bones and see what the signs tell us. Maybe we will go on together. Maybe each of us must take a different path. I cannot think of this now. My mind is clouded with other things. My heart is too full to let me see my way clearly. Eivind nodded, thinking her heart and her body could not possibly be full of as many conflicting feelings as his own. He could hardly think straight, so powerful was the longing in him.
You're exhausted, he said. You must sleep. I have no blanket, not even a cloak. Still, the wolfskin is warm. Lie down there. I will sleep over at the other side. A warrior is accustomed to a bed on hard earth. Your dog, have you given him a name?
Guard, I called him.
Guard will listen for intruders, though I think there will be none here. We'll fear to approach this place.
You did not fear it?
I was beyond fear, I think, once I thought you were lost. Now I know it again. I can scarcely bear to think of you going on alone.
Hush, Nessa said. Tonight is time out of time. There is no place for fear tonight.
You must rest.
He made himself move away, settle on the earth as far from her as he could go. Not far enough.
For him there would be no sleep.
The aching of his body would torment him. Her presence would ensure he fought back his desire, moment by moment, until dawn.
I don't like to see you so pale, so troubled. Have you held back your tears all this while, for those you have lost? You should not fear to weep. It does not make you any less strong to let your tears flow. Shall I blow out the lamp?
Not yet. Her voice was very small and wobbled. Evie? He waited in silence. I feel so lonely, she said in a whisper. They are all gone. My family, my people, all of them taken. I'm tired, but I don't want to sleep, not here in the dark. I don't want to see their dead faces in my dreams. He clenched his teeth together, willing himself not to move. You remember that night? That first night you woke up, in the tower in the earth? We sat by lamplight then and talked about dreams, and you put your arm around me and held my hand. It was a different sort of time, a time when hurts could be salved, and secrets spoken, and understood
As if the two of us were one.
He said it, despite himself. Could we do that again? She asked him. Will you stay by me and keep away the visions, just for a little while? If you would do that, this might be easier.
Not for me, he thought grimly, cursing his own selfishness.
What kind of man was he, that he could not suppress his body's urges in order to help a friend? How weak was his self-control, that he could not trust himself to touch without taking? Would you, Evie?
He could hardly hear her soft voice, and yet he felt it in every corner of his body.
He did not speak, but moved to sit as he had that first night, close by her with his arm around her shoulders, and his other hand clasped in hers. Her sweet scent filled his nostrils, her warmth flooded into him, and his breathing quickened, despite his best efforts to keep it steady. Hmm, Nessa said, and laid her head on his shoulder. That's good, Evie. That's so good. I did not know how much I had longed for this.
Then she fell silent,
and he could tell she was weeping. But he dared not hold her closer. He dared not reach to brush away those tears with his finger, to stop them with his lips, to... No. He would not think of that. His hand clasped hers tightly. He felt his breath escape in a great sigh. The gods were kind and cruel. They had delivered her to him, safe and well, when he had thought her lost. It was his own fault that he was no longer contented with what he had. "I'm sorry," Nessa said after a while. "I didn't know I was going to cry. I'm all right now. Perhaps we should try to sleep." Still, she held his hand, even when he made to get up. She clung to it.
"Perhaps we should," he said. "You stay here. The wolfskin is the warmest place. I'll go back to the other side."
He got to one knee, seeking to rise, but her hand held him fast. "No, Evie," she said quietly. "Here by me." His heart lurched.
"You don't understand," he said. "It shames me to say it, but I see I must. I cannot lie here by you, so close, and not... I'm sorry. I wish I could hold you and comfort you and not want you so much, but I have dreamed of you every night since we parted. I have thought of you every waking moment, so now, you see, I must sleep elsewhere."
She released his hand. He didn't seem to be able to move. He knelt where he was, staring at the ground, full of shame at his own weakness, full of sorrow at what could never be. Nessa was silent a little. When she spoke, her voice was both gentle and sure. "Evie," she said, "listen to me. There is no saying what tomorrow may bring for us. Maybe flight, maybe captivity, maybe death. I can't tell you about that. All I can tell you is what I'm feeling now. I have never lain with a man. I thought I never would. But my body's aching for you. It has been this long time. I don't want to die without holding you in my arms, flesh to flesh. I don't want to leave this world without doing what a man and a woman do when they love each other. That's all I can say, dear one. Of course, if you think it's better that we don't..." A sound came out of him, somewhere between an agonized groan of pent-up desire and a snort of astonished laughter. An instant later, she was in his arms, her lips soft on his, parting for him, hungry for him. Her hands were making patterns of sweet fire against his skin, and they lay down together on the wolfskin and forgot the world for a while in the fierce joy of coming together. She was new to this, and Avon's desire so strong it threatened to rob him of all control. He had thought Signa beautiful, with her lush figure and her fair wholesomeness, and so she had been. But this girl, birch pale, willow supple, her long brown hair a tantalizing silken shawl, half revealing the small, sweet curves of her, this lissome woman, was his heart's delight. She was his bright star, his joy and fulfillment. And he blessed Signa now for the skills she had taught him over those long nights in Freyrsfjord, how to be slow and careful, how to wait, how to make sure he did not hurt her. Such restraint took strength. He found that strength within himself, and it was only when Nessa cried out beneath him, her body trembling in the moment of fulfillment, that Avon let himself plunge over the brink into the darkness of his own pulsing release. They slept close-folded, arms wrapped around each other, legs entwined, breathing as one. Once or twice in the night they stirred, each moving a hand across the other's skin, stroking, touching softly, making quite sure this was not just another cruel dream. And once Nessa whispered, "Evie?" He stirred, not fully awake. "I think this is the first day of spring," she said, and slept again. His eyes snapped open. In an instant, body and mind were aware of danger. Here, inside, was the warmth of Nessa still sleeping, folded in his arms. There, outside, guard was barking a frenzied warning, and men were raising their voices to be heard over it.
"He's gotta be in there. We've tracked him down at last. Good work, lads. Who's going in to fetch him out?" "Going in? You must be joking."
"No time." He woke Nessa quickly, silently, his hand over her mouth to warn her. She, too, was instantly alert, moving to dress herself, to hunt for her few possessions in the half-dark, to slip her feet into her boots. Morning light came dimly through the tunneled entry. Nessa's eyes met his, wide with shock, recognizing that this time there was nowhere to run to. Avon struggled to keep his expression reassuring. The voices came again.
"What do you suggest, then? We've got to get him out somehow. There'll be a handsome reward in this, boys. Go on, Thorvald. You're a big, strong fellow. It's only a dog."
"Anyone got a thrusting spear? That thing's no dog. It's a fiend from the underworld. Take it from a distance. He might have half a chance."
Nessa's fingers moved to touch Avon's in the shadowed silence of the howl. Their fingers clasped tightly together. Even if it had been possible to speak, there were no words for this.
"Hang on," said another voice. "Don't be so ready with your talk of spears. That's Ulf's dog. Don't you recognize it? Shouldn't think Somerled would be too pleased if you ran it through like a pig on a spit."
"Here, give me that hammer of yours,"
said another man.
"Let me take a shot at the creature."
There was a shuffling followed by a dull thud. The barking ceased abruptly, and Nessa drew in her breath in a little gasp.
"Right. Now let's see you go in, Thorvald. You're the biggest. Fellow's quiet enough. Maybe he's still sleeping." "Very funny."
Thorvald sounded anything but amused.
"Great way to get us all killed. We creep in one by one, and he finishes us off one by one with his little knife the moment we come out the other end of that tunnel. This is a wolf skin, lads, not just another miscreant on the run. You won't see me crawling in there, reward or no reward."
"Why don't we just wait?"
offered somebody.
"He's got to run out of food sometime."
"Stay out here in this place overnight?"
This voice was incredulous.
"Smoke," someone said suddenly. "Make a fire at the entry. There's no hole on top. Place will fill up quick as a flash. He'll have to come out then. If he doesn't, he'll soon fall unconscious, and we can go in and get him trussed up before he knows what's what."
Avon bent to touch his lips to Nessa's brow, to stroke her soft hair with his fingers. "Farewell, bright star. My hand in yours." His heart was thundering in his breast. It was apparent to him that there was only one thing he could do.
"Good idea. You've more wit than I gave you credit for, man. Right, let's do it quick. Look around for what'll burn. I see that reward coming closer and closer. Might even be one of those handsome little islander girls in it. Who knows?"
Avon relinquished Nessa's hand and took up his stolen sword, his small dagger. He motioned again that she must keep silent, pointed to the back of the howe, where she would be least visible to anyone looking in from the entry. "Go there. Hide. Wait." Her eyes were frantic, though she kept her silence.
"No," she mouthed. "Maybe no."
"I love you."
His lips made the words without a sound, and then he turned his back on her.
"Thorvald," he shouted. "Gudbrand, is that your voice, old scoundrel? I'm coming out. I'm weary and hungry, and I've no desire at all for a lingering death by choking. I'll hand my weapons out before me. No tricks."
He crawled into the narrow passage as the men's voices rose in startled reaction. Behind him, all was silence. He came out into the light of morning, on his knees, half blinded by the brightness, proffering sword and dagger hilt first.
"Thor's hammer, Avond," someone remarked in tones of disgust. "You're not the man you once were, that's for certain."
"Tie his hands, quick,"
another man advised.
"Can't trust his kind."
Avond put up a slight struggle. It was best that this be done quickly, yet to give in too meekly was to invite suspicion. The dog lay prone near the entry, perhaps dead, perhaps merely stunned. Avon did not look back at the howe itself.
This all you've got?
Gudbrand, who seemed to be leading the expedition, stared hard into Eivind's face as the others bound his hands tightly behind his back.
No axe, no spear, no supplies.
Eivind shook his head.
I came away in haste, as you know, he said. My own things are gone. Still,
Gudbrand mused, scratching his chin.
Maybe we should have a look inside. Could be a trick. Not like your kind to give up so easily. Thorvald, why don't you go in and take a look? Me? Why not? Ever heard what happened to that fellow from Hafnarvagar that went in one of those and scratched his name rune on the stone? Spent the next 3 days babbling about ghosts and then jumped off a cliff into the sea. Come on, let's go back. There's a good pot of ale in this at least. What about the dog? Didn't you say the thing was Ulf's? Anyone volunteering to carry it? I say we leave it where it lies. Offering for the spirits. Keep them off our backs. Come on then, move you!
These men may have been his comrades once, but it was clear he was now no more to them than another captive to be hurried forward at spear point. Eivind did not look back. He set his eyes ahead, northward to Somalid's hall, blessing each step that took them farther from the place where Nessa still hid in shadows. They had not found her. She was safe for now. He must hope that she could go on alone and complete the mysterious task she had spoken of. At least, now that he was recaptured, there would be no need for Somalid to send warriors out in great numbers scouring the countryside. Nessa had at least some chance of evading the few who would still patrol what had once been the borders of Angus's kingdom. As for himself, despite the terror of seeing her so close to capture, his heart was whole again. He bore the sweet memory of last night with him, and it seemed to him that talisman had the power to arm him against much. It would be back to the little cell, he supposed, back to the darkness and the company of his own thoughts. So be it. If he must break out again, he would, no matter what guard they set on him. He'd have to let them hold him a few days at least, so Nessa had time to get away. Time to do the things she had to do before his own escape drew forth pursuit once more. Then he would go back to the old plan to seek out Eirik. Perhaps he would find Nessa again, drawn to her side by whatever ancient power had sent the two of them to find refuge in the selfsame hidden place on the selfsame night. That could hardly have been chance. If those forces were kind enough to lead him to her again, he would not leave her. He would do all that was in his power to keep her safe from Somalid. Time. That was all he'd need. Enough time. As they marched northward, his guards now grimly silent, Eivind planned it out in his head, imagining the musty outhouse where he'd been locked up before, picturing where they might deploy an increased guard, working out how long he would wait this time before making his move, and what path he would follow to come back to the south undetected. But it seemed they were not taking him to the isolated farm hut that had held him before. The group was passing to the west of that place, skirting wide around the fields that fringed Ulf's burial mound, then curving northeastward again to make their way straight toward the settlement and Somalid's hall. Eivind held his silence. It was clear to him from the disapproving scowls of his escort that useful information was unlikely to be forthcoming. He knew what was in their minds. To defy your chieftain's orders and turn against your own forces was bad enough. But what sort of warrior surrenders with no resistance at all, merely for the sake of a warm bed and a joint of mutton? Their eyes told him their opinion. He, whom they had once admired, envied, even idolized, was now sunk as low in their estimation as a worm beneath the boot heel. Lower, even, because of what he had once been. His shame had robbed them of words. The sight of the settlement wall, the calls of sentries, brought light back to their eyes and grins to their faces soon enough. Gritting his teeth, Eivind let them drag him into the enclosure, with more than a few glancing blows to ear and jaw inflicted on the way. They tied him to a post while Thorvald went ahead to the hall. It was not long before this new captive attracted a crowd, folk muttering and whispering at first, then jeering and shouting insults as confidence grew. Someone spat in his face. Aethon held himself still and quiet. His mind showed him small images, Nessa sleeping, a standing stone. Dark under the moon with the glittering lake water beyond. A lone pale beach where slow waves washed the sand. He breathed carefully. There were parts of him that hurt from blows received during that long walk north, blows he had chosen not to return. It was important to stay alert and save what strength he had. These men did not matter. Only Somerled mattered. At the back of the group that now surrounded him, their taunts increasing in the face of his own silence, he saw Grimm, a tall, broad figure clad in wolfskin and woolen tunic, the hammer slung on his back. A clever blow that had been. Grimm had known just how hard to strike, to stop but not kill him. He thought neither Holger nor Erland had shown such judgment. Still, one could not know who was a friend and who an enemy. Good and bad had become blurred on this island since Ulf's death, and Grimm, too, had charged across the causeway that morning to hew men limb from limb, to part head from shoulders. Someone threw an egg. It cracked on Avon's cheek and splattered across face and neck.
"Enough!"
Grimm's voice was deep and rough like the growl of a bear. Folk fell silent.
"What are you, some rabble starved of cheap entertainment? Take this man inside, get him cleaned up before Somerled sees him. A fellow's got the right to be heard before you set him up as a figure of fun, hasn't he? Now get out of here. I feel the itch in my fingers for a little hammer play, and right now I'm not particular who's in my way."
The enclosure cleared as if by magic, leaving Eivind and his captors. Grimm looked on with a heavy frown. He wasn't talking now. He stared at Eivind, and Eivind glanced back at him, and thought he saw the smallest of nods from the bearded warrior before Grimm turned on his heel and tramped off indoors. Then Gudbrand was tugging on the ropes that bound his prisoner, and he was hauled away. Inside, he was conveyed none too gently to the quarters where he had once slept with his fellow wolfskins. But nobody seemed to be prepared to unfasten the tight bonds that tied his hands behind his back, nor to tend to the cuts and bruises on his face, nor to offer a clean tunic or a bowl of fresh water. He waited, standing very still in the center of the room, while his captors conferred in low voices. A hearing, he thought. That would be the next thing. They'd lock him up for a while, and then he'd have to walk out in front of everyone and say what he had to say, with neither evidence nor witnesses. This wasn't how it was meant to be. He'd just have to do his best. At least he was buying time for Nessa. He wondered where she was now. He wished she would slip on board a fishing boat and go off to the outer islands, where Somerled's hand had not yet tightened its grip on her people. This new king would be busy enough establishing his realm of Hrosi, without turning his attention to the far-flung remnants of the folk on Sandy Island, or West Island, or the smaller, remoter places. But Nessa wouldn't go, he knew her. She was a leader. She would not rest until she'd completed the task she had spoken of. He hoped it would not bring her here to the settlement. He did not want her to be here, so close to Somerled.
"Right," said a voice from the entry. "The king wants to see him straight away, in his own quarters, alone." "Alone?" Gudbrand scowled. "That's hardly wise. A guard or two inside the chamber, surely." "Alone, and now," said Thorvald, who had brought the message. "That's what he said."
At the entry to Somerled's private quarters, which had once been his brother's, stood Holgar and Erland, one on either side of the doorway. Erland stepped forward, seizing Eivind by the arm, and jerked his head at Gudbrand in dismissal.
"That'll be all," he snarled.
Gudbrand hesitated. Perhaps his mind was on the reward.
"What's the matter? Lost your hearing suddenly?"
Holgar loomed up behind Erland, frowning ominously, and all at once there was nobody left but the three wolfskins.
"Says he'll see you on your own," Erland muttered,
avoiding Avon's eye.
Not very sensible, if you ask me.
Just don't try anything.
Holger's voice had an edge to it. He seemed ill at ease, jumpy.
We'll be right outside the door. No tricks. We know them all.
The length of thick woolen cloth that hung across the entry was drawn aside.
Eivind is no threat to me.
Sommerled stood there, his expression calm, his voice tranquil. He was plainly dressed in dark tunic and trousers, his hair gathered neatly back by a scarlet cord.
We're like brothers. You know him less well than you think, if you imagine he'd ever raise a hand to me. But by all means, stay out there if it makes you feel better. Down the hallway a little, if you please. This conversation is private. Come in, Eivind.
He stepped back, and Eivind walked into the chamber.
Oh, and by the way...
Someone had put his head outside again.
Tell someone we need a bowl of warm water and a cloth, and I think a jug of ale and a bite to eat won't go amiss either. Those who treated this prisoner so ill have erred. Tell them that hasn't gone unnoticed.
He pulled the curtain firmly closed. Eivind waited. This was not at all what he expected, not after that bloody dawn at the whaleback and Sommerled's challenge to him. This game seemed to have no rules at all. Sommerled regarded him gravely.
You don't look well, Eivind, he observed. Let's get these cuts cleaned up at least. Turn around.
Mutely, Eivind obeyed. He felt the light, deft touch of Sommerled's fingers as the rope which bound his hands was untied.
There,
said Sommerled, rolling the cord into a neat coil.
Now sit down, and we'll talk a little. It's good to see you, old friend, no matter what has passed between us. I've missed you. So much is new here, and strangely enough I find I don't particularly enjoy doing it all by myself.
Eivind sat. His arms ached. Red welts made broad bracelets nearly a handspan wide around his wrists. His hands were shaking. He clasped them tightly together and made himself breathe slowly. A man sidled in with water and a small towel. Another brought a tray with roasted meat and a jug of ale. The Sommerled filled two goblets.
You're very quiet, he observed. I don't know what to say to you.
Eivind looked into his old friend's eyes. He could read nothing there but anxious concern.
I don't know where to start. Here, eat and drink a little. Let me tend to those cuts first. There's crusted blood all down your cheek and across the brow. Not to speak of what looks like egg yolk. You've managed to surprise me, Eivind. The man who brought the news said you gave up without a fight.
I'm tired, Eivind said. It seemed to me there was nowhere else to run to.
But you escaped my custody. Where did you imagine you were going?
Eivind did not reply. He would not mention Eirik or Thord. He would not speak of Brother Tyg. No need to draw others into this. What he must do alone. Sommerled damped the cloth, dabbed at the wounds on Eivind's face. After a while he said quietly,
You can talk to me, Eivind. I'm not some monster, you know. I'm your friend, as I always was. Like you, I swore to be loyal above all else. That's why you are here alone with me, not dragged forth to account for your actions before the whole court. I want this settled properly, and I want to protect you if I can. Here, drink this ale. You look like a walking ghost. That's it. And eat. I suspect you've had nothing at all today. The men are angry. You cannot expect them to treat you kindly. They saw the way you defied my orders. They saw the way you stood against your own comrades.
Eivind felt confusion and doubt creeping back into his mind. His hand shook, and he set the ale cup down.
What do you mean, protect me? He asked. I've come here to tell the truth, that's all.
Somerled was watching him closely.
Truth?
He queried, brows raised.
Which